Welcome back to A Day in the Life of ESO, a live webcast celebrating ESO's 50th anniversary. Now, our next item on the agenda is the first of a series of talks from astronomers and engineers here at ESO headquarters in Garching near Munich in Germany. And it's my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker, the Director General of ESO, Professor Tim DeZeeuw. And he's going to tell us about ESO, its first 50 years, where we are today, and what we can expect in the future. And let me just remind you that you're invited to send us your questions and comments either via Facebook, Twitter, or email. But now let's get started, and everyone, please welcome Professor Tim DeZeeuw.
Thank you, Dr. J. It's really a very interesting day today, not because of the Beatles and Love Me Do, or Dr. No and the start of the Bond series, but of course for ESO, because 50 years ago today in Paris, five countries together signed an agreement to build a large telescope in the southern hemisphere. This became the observatory in La Silla, to which I'll return in a moment. But it's important to realize that today ESO has 14 member states, with Brazil soon to be the 15th. It has many more observatories, including the flagship Paranal. It's a partner in the ALMA project, and it's going to build the biggest eye on the sky, the ELT. And the organization serves more than 30% of all the world's astronomers. How did all of this happen? In the 50s, private fortunes were used in California to build what for the time were very large telescopes, the 3-meter Lick telescope and the 5-meter Hale, the big eye on Palomar. And European astronomers, led by Professor Jan Oort in Leiden, realized that they had to do something to stay in the game, to be able to scientifically compete. And so they concocted the idea that they should build a big telescope, 3 meters diameter, in the south, with the idea that this would probably be in Namibia. It took 8 years of discussions, and indeed the realization that they couldn't do this alone, but the countries would have to do it together to be able to build such a large machine. And in 1962, on this day, these five countries together signed an agreement that created our international organization. Belgium, France, Germany, the Netherlands, and Sweden. The goal of ESO, the original goal, was achieved in 1976 when the La Silla Observatory in Chile, which had much better conditions for astronomy than South Africa, when the 3.6 meter on La Silla opened for business. It's still very active today. The HARP spectrograph is the world's leading machine to find planets circling other stars, and delivers scientific results every day. In 1967, Denmark joined the organization, and in 1982, Italy and Switzerland joined. This, of course, increased the number of astronomers that had to use the telescopes, which is not good, because then the pie got smaller for everyone. But it also increased the funding for ESO, and that allowed ESO to build the new technology telescope, the NTT, also on La Silla. It helped to give the astronomers more observing time, but much more importantly, it pioneered various techniques, including active optics, that were important for the next step in ESO's development. And the next step is the idea that came already in the late 70s, and the decision that came in December 1987 to build what we now call the Very Large Telescope. Four giant telescopes, each with a mirror diameter of 8 meters, being able to work independently, but also able to work together and use a technique called interferometry. The telescopes have more than a dozen state-of-the-art instruments on it. There are four auxiliary telescopes that can help with the interferometry, and there are, as of now, also two wide field telescopes, the VST. It's not the very small telescope, but the VLT survey telescope and the VISTA infrared telescope. It's a wonderful integrated system that has led to many, many scientific discoveries. And while with the building of La Silla Observatory and the NTT, ESO basically caught up with a number of similar sized observatories in the world, with the decision to build and then construct the VLT, it took a world-leading position. In parallel to all of this, ESO also quietly entered what you might call the radio regime. There was a millimeter telescope on La Silla called the SEST, together with Sweden, and afterwards ESO is in a partnership with what is called the APEX experiment, an antenna of 12 meters diameter on the 5,000 meter high Chasnantur plain. And that's the same site near San Pedro de Atacama where a planetary partnership, if I may call it this, so intercontinental partnership with North America and East Asia, is building the largest radio observatory that the world has seen today. It's called ALMA, the Atacama Large Millimeter and Submillimeter Array. The construction is nearly finished, and it will open for full operations next year, although early science has already been done. And that promises to be very, very interesting. Now, what have these telescopes already shown us scientifically? The VLT in particular has contributed to all of astronomy, and it is simply impossible to give a large list of all the highlights. Our website, of course, has a number of them. For today, I thought I'd pick three and mention them briefly. One is the wonderful gift that came in the year of ESO's 25th anniversary, when a supernova exploded in our nearest neighbor galaxy, a supernova 1987A, which was visible in the south and taught us a lot about exploding stars. We haven't had one this year in the 50th anniversary, but who knows, it may still happen. The VLT has made fantastic contributions to the understanding of the giant black hole in the center of our galaxy. Looking with extreme sharpness of vision at the stars that orbit this monstrous physics object and trying to understand the nature of general relativity. And the third example, just as important, is that the VLT took the first image of an exoplanet back in 2004. Today we know that there are many, many stars around which planets orbit. And indeed, as already mentioned, the HARP spectrograph on the aging 3.6-meter telescope on La Silla is doing quite well in finding more of them. Let's look towards the future. The Paranal Observatory, the goal of the Paranal Observatory is to stay really at the forefront in the world. And the way we do that is we contribute, we upgrade the facility, we add new instruments, taking astronomical advantage of developments in technology, which are going quite fast in our society, as all of you know. ALMA is nearly finished with its construction, and as already mentioned, the early science is starting and has already delivered fantastic results on what you might call the cool universe. And when it's opening, when it's transitioning to full operations in about a year's time, it will really provide fantastic new insights in the deep universe and also in the nature of how you form planets and stars. And then this past June, the ESO Council, our highest body, approved a next giant project for ESO, and that is the construction of the extremely large telescope. An optical infrared telescope with a mirror diameter of nearly 40 meters, consisting of 798 hexagonal segments. It will take about 10 years to build. It will be put on Mount Amazonas, very close to Paranal, and be run as part of the same facility. It's maybe interesting to pause for a moment and think back again 50 years ago, when the goal was to build what became the 3.6 meter on La Silla, The secondary mirror of the ELT is already 4.2 meters, so that's bigger than the biggest goal that ESO had when it started. And it's simply the secondary mirror of a giant new eye on the sky. The science to come out of the ELT will be fantastic. It will also look in particular at exoplanets and again at the deep universe. All of this is possible because of the ideas of the founding fathers to create this organization as an intergovernmental organization, a treaty between countries. And that means that ESO has an enormously stable governance structure, as we call it. It allows the organization to not only make long-range plans, but also implement them and build these facilities that no single member state can develop by themselves. This is possible because of the governance structure. It's also possible because of the staff we have at ESO, talented engineers and scientists, and it's possible because of the strong support of the member states who work with ESO to build the telescopes, mostly done by industry, and to build the instruments. And as a result, we have really a partnership between all the member states and the institutions in them. And in that way, we can really, really advance astronomy in particular and science in general. And I want to say a big thank you to everyone over the past 50 years who made all of this possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim, for that presentation.
My pleasure.
For this overview of ESO. We actually have a number of questions for you from members of the public. And the first one is actually, what do you think is going to be the next big thing in astronomy during the next 50 years?
It reminds me of the old days when astronomers were asked to predict the future and they would have pointed hats with stars on them. It's not so easy to predict the future because, as we said before, the technology is advancing so quickly that has enabled jumps that you could hardly predict. If you look at the next 50 years, it's very important that our society remains focused on also doing science and develop the technology. Some questions will probably come up that we can't even imagine today. If you ask me personally, I think there will be breakthroughs in the area of dark matter and dark energy. And for sure, there will be fantastic progress in the whole study of the planets circling other stars. We already know more than 500 or 600 stars have planets, and the machines we are now building will be able to observe their atmospheres in some cases and test for the evidence of, for example, biological activity. And that gets us into an entire interdisciplinary field that even links to the origin of life. And I think that's really fantastic.
So I've got another question here from, I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, excuse me if I'm not pronouncing the names properly. So from Don Paolo Chiavacchi, I believe. And he's asking, what is the role of the slightly smaller wide-field telescopes on Paranal in the VLT and ELT era?
That's a very good question. The wide-field telescopes allow us to survey big areas of the sky very quickly. And then the software that analyzes the images can find odd objects that are interesting. And we can then follow them up with high-resolution observations with the VLT.
And another question from Mikhail in the Ukraine. So what do you think will happen if we discover a habitable planet? What's going to happen next?
Well, it would be nice to go and fly there, but that technology we don't have yet. I think finding the planets already is a logical step in our long history of civilization, that the Earth was first in the middle of the universe, now it's no longer there, and all of this. If we find a planet that has biological activity, that doesn't need to be intelligent life as we would define it, then I think it once again shows that we are perhaps not quite as special as we think we are, and that the conditions for generating life prevail throughout the universe, which would be quite an interesting sort of realization for our culture, I think.
Now I have another question from Lucius via the live stream. This is actually quite a detailed question about the VLT interferometer.
Yes.
And he's asking, why are the VLT unit telescopes arranged in this complex geometry as they are? Why are the big telescopes not arranged in an easier way?
It's a good question. The principle of interferometry, the fact that they are an interferometer means that we can combine the light of the four telescopes in such a way that they mimic a telescope of the diameter that is as big as the distance between the two most distant ones. So that's about 130 meters. It's not a telescope with a single mirror of 130 meters, which would be nice to have, but a bit expensive to build. But you get the sharpness of vision of a telescope of that diameter, but not the sensitivity. And to be able to get as much information about the objects that you're observing from that sort of fake or virtual telescope, there is an optimal way of putting the telescopes, and that's what we did.
Okay, thanks very much. That's all the questions. Oh, sorry, one more just came in. do you think humans will... this is from Rafael Perino via Twitter. Do you think humans will ever build a telescope capable of resolving surface features on an exoplanet?
Yes.
That's quick. So it's going to happen? When you think that's going to happen?
I think this may well happen in the next 100 years. Mm-hmm. It's not guaranteed that this is on the ground. Huh? It could be in space.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we have a final question from, again, apologies if I'm mispronouncing your name, Kandazami Mohan via Facebook. Has anyone seen the Big Bang itself in a telescope?
The answer is yes. The COBE and WMAP satellite see the afterglow of the Big Bang in the cosmic microwave background radiation.
And they're coming in fast now, fast and furious, the questions. From McCannister via Twitter, is it still possible to visually observe with the largest telescopes by eye, or is the only way of using them just using CCD cameras?
We use them indeed with CCD cameras, and the computers read it out and analyze the data. It is possible to project on one of the foci the image of the full moon so you can really look at it, but we don't use them anymore with the eyepiece and the astronomer just by herself looking at it. No.
Right, so it's not happening anymore. Oh, now a question for the very long-term future from Mantas Sasnauskas via livestream. What are ESO's plans after the EELT?
The plan is to continue to operate the observatories we have as long as they stay at the technological and scientific forefront, and to continue to build new observatories, which are world-leading and would be beyond the capabilities of what single member states could afford or even construct. There are various ideas. Could be in the radio, could be again in the optical. We might even launch something. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get onto the toes of ESA, but I'm not going to speculate what it will be.
But there is no concrete project.
No, there is no concrete project. Yeah. There are many ideas, and the astronomers are extremely enthusiastic and inventive, mm-hmm, to think about new things to learn about the universe. There is a strong commitment from the ESO Council to continue this sort of evolution of new facilities, but there is no specific project on the drawing board.
So just looking... Sorry, continue. No.
Send me ideas.
Yeah. So just looking back into the past again, so for you personally, what was maybe the biggest highlight of ESO's achievements in the history of ESO?
I think the biggest highlight, you can ask the question about the science, and that's very hard to judge. I mentioned three examples, but to pick one of the three, I mean, they're all fantastic. The biggest achievement, I think, is that the countries decided to work, not only decided to work together, but made it possible and created in ESO a network of institutions working with ESO that built these facilities, and that is unparalleled in the world. Mm-hmm. So it's an organizational highlight, if you wish.
Right. Yeah. Another question from Jovan Vista via live stream. How far back in time can the VLT see? Can it picture early galaxies or even the first stars?
It looks back in time to, I think, about 95% of the history of the universe. You actually are better placed to answer this question than I am. I don't think we've seen the first stars, but we have certainly pushed the looking back in time back to the time of the first galaxies.
And perhaps another question about ALMA here. So I believe from Babis Daoutis via live stream, what time of day can you use the ALMA radio telescopes? Only at night?
No, you can use ALMA in principle 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Good. I think that's all that we have right now. So thank you, Tim, very much for your presentation. It was a pleasure to have you here, join us here at the webcast, and thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Right, and when we come back, we'll have the next in our series of talks from astronomers here at ESO headquarters, and the next one is going to be from Joana Asenso. She's a young ESO astronomer, and she will talk about what life as an astronomer is really like.